Hey, Civilistas. Stephen here, recording from my office in Hillsborough, North Carolina. Thanks so much for downloading the Civilist podcast. We're wrapping up production on the show, but before we go, I wanted to share this recording of a live event we recorded last month in Durham, North Carolina. It's the hometown of my alma mater, Duke University. You'll also hear me refer to my producer, Rebecca Martinez, who plays us some pre-recorded listener questions, and then read some live ones we collected that night at Motorco Music Hall. Thanks again for listening. Enjoy our live show. Welcome to The Civilist from WUNC and PRI. It's a flame-free zone where we talk about your stickiest political and personal dilemmas with kindness and respect. I'm your host, Stephen Petro. Today we're recording live from the Motorco Music Hall in Durham, North Carolina. In our new Rules for Better Behavior segment, Duke University graduates, undergraduates, Shinaria Monze and Matthew King are back. They'll help me to field listener questions about what to say when a colleague is guilty of workplace interruptus, whether it's sexist to hold the door for someone of the opposite sex, hint, I think it's not, and how to stop feeding the social media egos of your selfie-obsessed friends. So stick around, all that and more, now. So tonight, on our new Rules for Better Behavior segment, I'm happy to welcome back two guests from earlier this season. They're both Duke students, my alma mater. First, we have Shinaria Monze. She goes by Chichi. And I understand you're a senior, and your major is International Comparative Studies with a focus on Africa, and you're graduating in a couple of months.
I am.
Congratulations. And I won't ask you whether you have a job, because I'm sure that's what everyone's asking you. And Matthew King is also back tonight. He's a conservative columnist at the Duke Chronicle, but he did not vote for Donald Trump, in case you're worried. He studies political science, and he's headed to Cameroon next month as part of his junior year abroad. Safe travels, Matthew.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So we're going to take some listener questions, and this first one is about interrupters in the workplace. And let's listen to it.
I work with a lot of people that I like to call time burglars because they come into where I'm working and start talking about things that aren't really related to what I'm doing. And I'm in the middle of a task and I really want to finish it, but I don't want to be disrespectful and not listen to what they're saying. Is there any way to respectfully tell people to kind of like respect my time in exchange for me respecting theirs?
So, Chichi, how much time and effort should we make to give to people who are interrupting us when we're in the middle of a task that is our own?
That's a really good question. I do have a job, so I guess this will be an issue that I'm facing sooner rather than later. I don't really think that you owe anyone your time when you're in the middle of something really important, especially if it's work-related. I do think it's polite to make time for others, but I think it's impolite to interrupt someone when they're trying to get something done. So I think it's totally acceptable to just say, oh, I'm kind of in the middle of something, but I'll catch up with you later.
And Matthew, do you think it's any different when it's in the workplace versus whether, you know, you're at home with friends, family?
Is this your way of saying I don't have a job?
Yeah. You're only a junior.
Yeah. I don't know. I would suggest a flow chart for answering this question. And the first box in that flow chart is going to say, is the person interrupting you your boss? Yes or no? And if the person is your boss, you should probably make time for them. If they're
he
not...
He always steals my lines. We didn't go over this ahead of time.
Oh, really? Okay.
Go ahead.
So if not, I say this as someone who's probably very guilty of time burgling, because I like to talk and I like people and sharing ideas. I appreciate being told when someone needs space and needs time, and I hope that we could just establish that as a norm and just allow people to say, hey, I'm working on something, I'm in the middle of it, could you give me 5 minutes? Then we can have this conversation.
So I think this is actually reflective of a deeper problem, and I'm going to call it the me problem, or the narcissism that we see just about everywhere, including some parts of the government. But I'll move past that. it's all about me these days, you know, and I text you, I Facebook you, I tweet you. I expect my needs, my question to be taken care of right now, right away. And so, you know, my advice here is that we all kind of check that impulse a little bit and not put ourselves center stage. And then, yes, if it's the boss, forget everything I just said. So let's go to our next question, Rebecca.
I have several friends that I follow on Instagram who are kind of obnoxious. All they do is post braggy pictures about all their travels or their shopping hauls or selfies when they're in beautiful locations. And it's not that fun to see them on my stream. But they're also the type of friends who would notice if I didn't like their stuff or if I unfollowed them. Do you have any advice?
I hate those people. What's your take? Do you know anybody like that?
So I would suggest that there's a little bit of that in everyone. It's the nature of social media to self-select what you put out there and to put out the more glamorous stuff, the better stuff that is going on in your life. And if you were to post something about a personal
problem.
Don't
you want to be authentic?
And you know, you do want to be authentic.
Chi-Chi's saying no.
But I'm just saying, maybe this is old school, but you should examine the beam in your own eye before you try to pluck the needle out or the splinter out of someone else's.
And how do you feel about friends of yours that are just showing how fabulous they are 24/7 when nobody really lives like that? Yeah. I don't think.
I mean, I think it speaks to kind of the weird, I guess, nature of social media. Because to me, the question sounds a lot more about followers than friends. So my friends who have really showy lives on Instagram, I know that's not there every day because I'm with them every day or every other day. And so in that case, I feel like if it's someone that you're not close enough to that you don't know or don't realize that they're not in a beautiful location every day, they're putting on sweats and trudging to the library during finals week like the rest of us, which is right now, then go ahead and unfollow them. I mean, it's not really going to affect your life, just your follower count. But if they really are your friends, then I think you can just talk to them and say, I'm so jealous of all your adventures. Take me on the next one.
Yes. I want to come too. Right. And I think you also want to be a little bit careful when you go away on a trip. Yeah. There are these people who are like looking on Facebook and Instagram for people who go on vacation and then they go and rob their homes because they know they're in London or wherever. So
choose your Facebook friends wisely.
Yes. Yeah. So this next question involves a traditional nicety from a young gentleman.
What is the etiquette on holding doors for members of the opposite sex? I don't want to be considered old-fashioned or, at worst, sexist.
Yeah, and my first question to myself was, which is worse, to be old-fashioned or sexist? But I'll come back to that. So, Chi-Chi,
yeah.
How do you handle the door situation?
I actually found this question really interesting because I guess it doesn't really cross my mind. I mean, if I'm opening the door, I usually hold it for whoever's behind me. I don't stop and check and say, like, how do you identify? And then if they say male, like, slam it in their face. But like,
really? So, like, thank you.
You know, like, seems kind of odd. I mean, I think it's just, it's kind of a gender neutral situation. It's just polite to hold the door.
But what if a guy like rushes ahead of you to get the door, kind of implying you're too weak to do it yourself? I mean, I know some of those guys at Duke.
Yeah.
I went
like
to Duke
run
too,
to
you
hold
know?
The chapel door open. Goodness gracious. I think for me, I personally would just like walk through it slightly amused because you're probably way more tired than I am since you just ran to get the door and it would have honestly been easier for me to just open it. But I think in general, if you feel compelled to run and hold the door open for the opposite sex, so maybe stop and ask yourself why you mm-hmm. feel that this door is going to be so challenging for someone based on their gender and not just like a, you know, push-pull kind of thing. Yeah, I guess my advice would just be, if you have that impulse, maybe stop and think and just realize it's polite for anyone. It's very rude to be right behind someone and they let the door slam in your face.
So Matthew, have you been in this situation at all? I imagine you might have been.
Yeah, I've had the door slammed in my face before.
Not by anyone we know.
No, I was just raised to hold the door open for everyone.
And you were raised in Virginia.
Which I don't know, you know, why that would be any different from North Carolina, but
Well, it is in certain ways.
Okay, so I think that there, I'm not an engineer, but I think that there is a structural problem, which is that you've got a door, right? And if you enter and there's someone 5 feet behind you, the door is going to shut in their face. And so you just, it's just the nice thing to do, I think, to hold the door. And I do it for everybody.
You're both very polite. So I've seen in the workplace where it's more complex than this, because there are all these power schemes going on in people's minds, at least. I mean, an office means so much more than just a space. And you have to be thoughtful about it, and I think there's a generational difference, too. Some people expect it, and other people are really repelled by it. So you give me hope for the future. So I think now we're going to go to some of the listener questions, and Rebecca, you are going to read them, and we're going to... And none of us have seen them, and we thank you for them, and we'll do our best.
Thank you for folks who wrote their questions in the back. These come from the audience. First one deals with a roommate situation. Our roommate always cooks things on high heat. Splatter city, am I right? And never uses the fan, so it smells up the whole house. How can we politely ask her to use the fan in the kitchen while she cooks?
Okay, I don't have a roommate, so do either of you?
I do, but I don't have a kitchen. I live in a, like, 12 by 12 room.
No roommate, no kitchen.
I will field this one. I moved off campus this year, so I do have a roommate, and I do have a kitchen. Great stuff. Still don't cook, but besides the point. I think in that case that would be something that you can just go up and ask. I think that's one of the things that if you're cooking, you wouldn't really notice. Unless someone points it out to you and says, oh, hey, there's a fan in the kitchen. Like, it would be really great if you could run that I wouldn't make it roommate specific, while anyone in the house is cooking, so that we can make sure that if you're trying to focus and you're distracted by the smell of whatever deliciousness is happening down here, that doesn't happen. So I would just ask and try not to target it at your roommate, because that's always uncomfortable.
So I don't have a roommate, but I do have a husband, and I am the one who forgets to turn the fan on all the time, and he's always using his words to remind me. So good advice.
It works, yeah.
Next up.
I made a new best friend recently, and he does not have the same political views as me. I don't agree with him on lots of things. He's very intense about politics and, frankly, a little scary. I get uncomfortable when we talk about this, and I'm too afraid to tell him to stop. And if I do, I'm afraid he won't stop.
Okay, so Matthew, you were head of a group on the Duke campus that tried to bring people from different political parties together. So what's your advice here?
I think this is a good question, because it's probably something that we all face at different times. Because depending on where you are on the political spectrum, there are issues that alienate you and that might really touch a nerve. So I think that we have to get in the business of understanding how other people come to their beliefs and what values they hold. And even if we disagree with those values, even if they're not the ones that we share, I think that you have to learn that language in order to understand where they're coming from.
You know, I recently fielded a lot of questions about families coming together at Thanksgiving after they had been split apart over the election season and shouting at each other on social media without listening. So I think one of the things we need to start doing again is listening and then responding to people, using our eye contact, body language to connect, because we're so disconnected on social media and it becomes harder and harder.
I think part of listening is asking good questions. Mm-hmm. And instead of just immediately arguing with someone, ask them why, right? Engage them in a conversation and try to get to the root of their beliefs.
So I did try that with my Republican brother-in-law. It didn't go so well.
When and how is it appropriate to tell someone they are mansplaining? Also, how do you explain what mansplaining is?
At the risk of mansplaining, I'm going to duck this one.
Me. When is it appropriate to tell someone that they're mansplaining? On site? No, unless they're your boss, and then probably in private. But no, I mean, I think if someone's mansplaining, it definitely depends on the situation. If it's a friend or a family member on site, if you're in a work situation, in private, or even in a classroom, classrooms are pretty open spaces to say that I can comprehend the situation as well. So I thank you for the explanation, but I do not require it. How do you explain what mansplaining is? That is more complicated. I mean, I think that you can kind of mansplain the explanation or womansplain it back and say, you know, it's the habit of trying to, making the assumption that for some reason, women are not as capable of understanding certain situations and talking to a woman, you know, just as competent, just as capable, just as intelligent as you are in a way that you might talk to like a small child. I think that, in that instance, you can definitely try your best to go up front. And while it's such a frustrating situation, especially in the classroom or the workplace, to not kind of lose your temper and be like, I literally understand this better than you. No need. And try and keep it polite and say, thank you for trying to help, but I'm honestly capable of handling this situation. If that person insists on treating you like they are a small child, then can't really give advice for what comes next.
That's great. Yeah. Rebecca?
A while back, I was in the middle of a long texting conversation with a friend when I realized they were texting while driving. I stopped texting with her immediately, but I brought up the subject later. She texted, I know I have some bad habits, and I said, texting while driving isn't a bad habit, it's depraved indifference to human life. Needless to say, she didn't take this well. How should I have handled things?
That is really tough. And I am never guilty of that either. Unfortunately, I am. I mean, I try now to lock my phone in the glove compartment so that it's just out of my way. But I think it's really important to just be upfront, because they're not only a danger to themselves, they're a danger to everyone else on the road. And that's where we talk about, you know, a common good and civic responsibility. It's not about me, it's about us. So I think hard conversations have to be had when required like this.
Yeah, to whoever wrote that question, I would just say you nailed it. I mean, that's something that's very serious and is, if you look at the statistics, potentially even more hazardous than drunk driving. And I think should be treated with the same amount of caution and even stigma.
I might have a little bit of a different response. While I agree with the sentiment about depraved indifference to human life, that is correct. I think the goal is to get your friend to listen and try and change her behavior. And that can be difficult when she just reads your text and is like, ugh, and then decides not to respond. So I would definitely engage them again if they just didn't respond last time, because they're probably still texting and driving. And I've definitely been in a car with a friend who's texting and driving, and I'm like, you're not going to kill me today. So we're going to put this away and literally taking the phone. I would not recommend doing that. But I would recommend trying to engage your friend again on the next level and say, no, but this is really serious. Like, you're a danger to yourself and others. It can wait. You're not texting anything that important.
You know, and I think a good analogy is when people have been drinking, good friends will take the keys or call an Uber.
Yeah.
And you have to be assertive or aggressive about that. And I think the same is true here.
I will take phones, yes.
Yes. And anything else in our grab bag?
Our last question of the night. When is it too late to send holiday cards?
Okay, so what's a holiday card? You know, oh yeah, they came from trees. Well, I'll start off with that one, because I still like sending holiday cards. And I do often run late into the season or into the new year, and then they become New Year's cards, and I wish you a happy new year, and I'll just cross it off or something like that. So that's my take.
Yeah, I would say after New Year's, that's it. Hard stop.
Or before Valentine's Day,
for sure.
Yeah, I've never actually sent a holiday card. I'm just going to guess and go with by the time it's like a new holiday when it's like Valentine's Day and you got to do a whole different kind of card, probably too late.
It's like, I think the new rule for, you know, when you need to write a thank you note for a wedding gift is, you know, before your divorce. So my guests tonight have been Chinnery Amanze and Matthew King. They both took the night off from their studies at Duke to be with. Thanks to you guys.
Thanks for having us.
And that's it for us tonight. Rebecca Martinez is our producer. Mark Blasco wrote our theme music, and I'm Stephen Petro. Thank you.